Live at One Buck Palace, it's the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Happy Tuesday. November 1st is here. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast. And the Bucks put on a real Halloween fright show, of course, on Sunday, as we've all experienced now. Ira, I'm Steve Isbitz. We got the full cast here today. Lee D. Camper, we are Joes of JoeBucksFan.com. And, of course, Ira Kaufman, Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter, on his esteemed podcast, delivered and presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Check out EdMorseCadillacTampa.com and EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com for all the great November specials that are coming soon and the fantastic financing offers. And, of course, that's your first destination, both of those dealerships, before you shop anywhere else. Now, Ira, the Buccaneers, 3-4, and, of course, the fans are – everyone is still talking about this historic debacle at Raymond James Stadium to keep this team winless at home yet again.
It's 48 hours have passed, gentlemen, 48 hours, and I still can't get over it. And I'll tell you why. It's hard to lose a game if you're trying to lose a game when you get a plus 17 on the penalty, you know, table. You're plus one on the turnover table. Lee, you're playing at home. You got an early lead. Everything's going swimmingly. I thought the crowd was good. Lee, they were loud. Yeah, they were sprinkled in with some Raider fans, to be expected. And Lee, with a chance to make Thursday night's game even more meaningful on John Lynch night, the Bucks lay an egg. As Isbitz was saying, I almost felt like throwing a couple of Snicker bars at them as they were going into the locker room, because it was a holiday treat that they just gave the Raiders, Lee. I still can't believe they lost that game.
They laid more than an egg, but I'm not going to go PG or even R-rated here. It was beyond shameful that and Ira, you've been around a lot longer than I have, and I should be more politically correct. You've covered a hell of a lot more games than I have.
And I've been around longer.
Yeah, about 6-7 years, maybe.
There you go.
And I've never, ever, ever, ever seen a team hand a game on a silver platter a half a dozen times, and the other team just puked all over themselves, just did nothing with it. I've never seen it. And after the game Sunday, I was able to talk to Brent Grimes briefly, and that was the first time I ever really did a one-on-one with Brent Grimes. Really, really cool dude. And so, at any rate, I asked him, I said, Brent, have you ever been involved in a game, high school, college, NFL? You ever been involved with a game where an opponent gave you so many chances, and you think, we got this game, and it never happened? And he said, first off, he said, no, that's never happened. And then he said, this was a unique game. And that was about the most polite way you could say about that game Sunday. That was unique.
Steve, I think the only question that's compelling right now going into Thursday night's game is Miko going to tweet anything about this game?
Oh, no, there's lots of compelling questions here. First, Ira, number one is, do you typically throw Snickers bars at people?
Well, depends on who comes to my door, but, the other night I treated some people brusquely if I don't like the costume.
I've never heard of throwing.
If I don't like the costume, they get it between the eyes.
I've never heard of throwing Snickers bars before. Must be a Brooklyn thing.
There you go.
Frozen right. Snickers?
Now, Ira, I mean, come on, man. 600-something yards allowed, a new Bucks record, 500-something through the air to Derek Carr. Mike Smith, guy you respect, we've been chronicling his defense. What the hell is wrong with this defense, Ira?
Mike Smith had a bad day, Steve. It's 48 hours later, and he still had a bad day. and he doesn't have a lot of time to turn this thing around. Now, look, the defense had been playing better, guys, for 2 or 3 weeks, 2 or 3 games. I felt they could keep maybe Oakland in check a little bit, but as the game progressed, guys, Oakland became more and more unstoppable. And the only thing that stopped them was the Oakland Raiders.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
Well,
they had this game won 4 times.
Yeah. Let's cut you off for a second here. Do you have to revisit how well this defense was really playing? Paxton Lynch,
Derek Anderson,
who they couldn't hit, Colin Kaepernick, who's a train wreck. Were they really playing better?
Steve, when I say that Mike Smith had a bad game, Lee, what I mean is I didn't think he showed any innovation. I thought he was locked into that 4-man pass rush, and it became obvious to the three of us, and we're certainly no football savants on a level with Mike Smith.
Speak for yourself.
this is not 2002. the four-man rush is not getting there, Lee.
Well, you
so
know what?
When they blitzed the last few games, I thought it was fairly effective mm-hmm. in spots. I didn't see a lot of that today.
Well, I'm going to bring something up here. I was going to bring it up with Mike Smith this week, and I may still do it. It almost doesn't
sound. I thought you were going to bring up Lovie Smith.
Oh, he'll come up momentarily.
He'll come up. Okay.
But this is almost bringing it up with Mike Smith. I almost think it's apples and oranges, but you're starting to go somewhere that about 2002, this ain't 2002, you can't use a four-man rush all the time. Saturday night, I was watching Florida State Clemson, and Florida State's got a defensive end, Demarius Walker.
He's a heck of a player.
But did you notice in the fourth quarter, he didn't even try to rush the passer? He stayed at the line of scrimmage and jumped up, and he batted down like three or four passes.
Yes, he did.
And I was going to ask Mike Smith, is that the wave of the future, or is that now? Because I hate to compare college to NFL, but you know, given the fact the Bucs can't rush the passer to save their lives outside of an accident once or twice a game, should they just have the defensive ends just stay at the line of scrimmage and jump up and try to bat the pass down with a guy like Golston who has a wingspan?
Yeah.
I mean, so you're sort of thinking the same way I am. Is that what the future of pass rushing against a three-step drop is going to be? Forget rushing the pass. You're wasting your time. Just get your hands up.
Steve, did you see any exotic blitzes being dialed up?
Well, to answer Lee's question, man, maybe you just go out and sign Bob Lanier and get him up there. So I'm like, but anyway,
I hear Manute Bowles available.
Yes, the man's dead. Let's have some respect. Maybe we flip DeMar Dotson to D-line.
Where's my blitzing line?
Couple of things to respond to you there, Ira. First, I saw at least three times Jude Ajay Barima coming on this exotic corner blitzes. They got picked up every time, every single time. However, I'm not knocking you here. Levante David, Quan Alexander, invisible on the blitz, not even coming very often at all, if at all. I don't know why we were supposed to see a lot more Levante David as a spot pass rusher playmaker. This was probably Quan's worst game. He had some terrible run fits, and just he's not the guy he was.
How come we're the only guy that watches film of Levante David in 2012? How come we're the only three schnooks out there that know that this guy is extremely versatile, and you can use him in a variety? By the way, among the invisible list, you can add 93, Gerald McCoy.
One tackle.
I didn't notice him either, Steve.
One tackle.
Well, what do you make of that? Now, this is his second game back.
I don't care that he's double teamed. Warren Sapp was double teamed. The Sue's double teamed.
A lot of guys are double teamed.
The great players are double teamed, Steve. That's no factor. You got to expect it. I think McCoy has earned that kind of a status now around this league. You got to be an impact player, Lee.
Well, I'll throw this out at you. And we were just talking about Mike Smith, how he didn't do anything, didn't dial up anything exotic. How about moving McCoy around a little bit? Just see what happens. You know, if you're banging your head up against the wall and nothing's happening, try something different. You know the old saying, what's the definition of insanity? Trying the same thing over and over and expecting a different result? Yeah. Move them around a little bit. Let's see what happens. What are you going to lose?
Not bad, Lee. Not bad.
Derek Carr, of course, as Bucs fans have probably tried to block out, Ira, but to really paint the picture a little stronger, 40 for 59 for a record-setting 513 yards, only two sacks with 60 dropbacks. That's two games worth of dropbacks
right
there. And four touchdowns, no picks, a game where they...
Going back to the Snicker bar, had time to eat a Snicker bar.
Had time to eat a Snickers bar, maybe a king-size Snickers bar. That's not going to change anytime soon. The pass rush just isn't going to appear. Will Golston, he's not a pass rusher. Robert Ayers, we'll give him a break. His first game back from injury.
Here comes the high-flying Falcons, gentlemen. This ain't no breather coming up from a Thursday night.
He was pretty invisible. McCoy is not making plays in the pass rush game. Certainly not
Ayers,
today.
You're going to cut some slack, right? First game back.
Yeah, we have to. And, of course, the Raiders have a fantastic offensive line. But, you know, okay, now, Ira, the state of the team. Okay, 3-4, tied for second with the Saints. All of a sudden, Carolina's resurrected now, clobbering the Arizona, the Cardinals. And this is a huge game coming up here. But forget about the Falcons for a minute. The state of this team, where are they here?
Well, I hate to say this, Lee, but I think it's true. My 7-9 doesn't look so bad right now.
No.
After today. Winnable game. It was an even game going in, according to Vegas. Mm-hmm. And those boys usually know what they're talking about. It was an even game for much of the day. Mm-hmm. But, Steve, when the final whistle blew, the Raiders are the better team. They outplayed them by a significant margin. Especially after the first quarter. Significant margin.
What the hell? I can't. You're making me sick, Ira.
Significant margin.
Outplayed them 23 penalties.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. He's just making my point.
Yeah, he's making his point.
That's not outplaying them. That's
when you still win.
You're overcoming a record number of penalties.
When you win a game, crapping in your pants that much. You were the better team.
You stick to your Falcon.
I don't know.
To your Falcon quest. You're way off on this.
Raiders were not.
Raiders were not what?
Sloppy.
They had the ball 44 minutes.
And yet they overcame all the adversity. That's a good team.
I didn't say they weren't
sloppy. I'm asking you about the Bucs. The state of the Bucs.
State of the Bucs is lousy.
Lousy. All right. There you go.
0-3 at home, gentlemen. Let's go again. And that brings us to DeKemper's favorite statistic. Go ahead, Lee.
All right. Since Greg Schiano was fired January 2014, your Buccaneers are currently 3-16. Think about that, folks. 3-16 since Greg Schiano was fired. And to go back a little further, and this is one of my favorite pet peeves, since the day Chucky was jettisoned from this organization, the Bucs have won a grand total of 17 home games. That's since January 2009. We're looking at 6.5
seasons. Is that the fewest?
That's by far the fewest of any NFL team going. Last time I checked it, which was right before the Bucs' first home game this year, that was 17. Obviously, they haven't won a home game yet. That was five behind, I want to say, Cleveland. It was Cleveland, Jacksonville, and there was a third team. I can't remember. It was either Oakland or Detroit. Okay. But by far, almost a season's worth of wins.
Steve, how are you going to generate interest among your locals when you can't win at home?
You're going to do the opposite.
You just can't do it.
You're going to chase
a boy. It's
very
difficult.
You're going to chase a boy.
Brian Ford's got an impossible job right now, Steve.
Not in the NFL. I mean, there's so few games. You can't just keep leaving people depressed and more depression over and over and over again. We've seen the results in the crowd. And it's a mess.
I didn't think Sunday's crowd was bad, Steve. No, all things considered, I didn't think it was a bad crowd.
Should I use some of my analogies I used Sunday?
It wasn't bad. A lot of black, but I mean, you know, it was okay.
Should I use a couple of my analogies I used Sunday?
As long as you don't get Lovie Smith into this conversation.
No, but I'll get Lovie Smith. All right. Here were some of my analogies. You know, obviously, if you're going to go to a Bucs game, especially if you're going to bring a family or you're going to bring a significant other, what have you, you're going to drop minimum $100. Minimum.
Okay.
You add it all up. If Carrie Underwood looked like Rosie O'Donnell, would you cough up any money to see her? If the St.
Sounds like Donald Trump over here, isn't it?
If the St. Pete Rib Fest, if you knew the pork was going to be raw, the beer was going to be warm as urine, and the music was going to be like a teenage garage band, would you pay three figures to go there? Of course you wouldn't. If Eddie Van Halen was an invalid, would you listen to him to try to play music? Of course you wouldn't. So why would anyone come and expect this schlock out here for football that people would drop $100+? Plus? Well, I mean,
DeKemper's all revved up, Steve. He's all revved up.
It's almost like saying, if the Ira Kaufman podcast, if subbing for you was some guy from the Tampa Bay Times, would you listen?
He's as revved up as one of those Cadillacs.
You took the words out of my mouth. The Ed Morris. Here, let's go.
He's full throttle right now, Stephen. You got DeKemper at full throttle. He's upset with this loss. And, Steve, how could you not be? I don't care if it's 48 hours. I don't care if it's 4 days later. This one is almost impossible to get over. Imagine the enthusiasm, Steve, generated by a win. You're 4-3. Sure. Here come the Falcons. It's a big game. John Lynch going in the Ring of Honor. If I'm fortunate enough, John Lynch going into the Hall of Fame the day before the Super Bowl in Houston. Of course, you boys will be sending me to Houston. I want to get that right out there on the record. I don't miss a trick, Isbitz. But, Steve, instead, the elation is replaced with
deflation.
Absolute deflation, bitter disappointment, frustration. Badly outplayed, Steve. I don't care what you say. Badly outplayed, and only the largesse of the Raiders kept them in that ballgame.
Well, you know what, this is what I'm going to say. Was this a horrible loss? Sort of. I think the Rams' loss was worse. That was a winnable game against a garbage team. Raiders aren't garbage. You may say they're flawed, but they're not garbage. What I think, was this a kick in the gut game? Sure. But you know what? I can't kick sand in the Bucs' faces right now because they can still win the division. If they somehow pull off a win against Atlanta, we're jumping up and down. They're tied for first place. So this is not.
And Steve, you'd think they're going to beat the Bears. You would think they're going to beat
the Bears. Well, one step at a time.
One step at a time.
They beat the Falcons 3 in a row. There's no reason to say that they can't beat the Falcons. The record of teams traveling for a Thursday night game in the NFL is very poor. And the Bucs obviously sort of unfortunately negated a bit of that benefit when you've got the defense on the field for 84 plays, plus a bunch of snaps that don't count as plays because of all those penalties.
By the way, the 23 accepted penalties, how many unaccepted penalties were there? Another three or four?
Well, that
would have been in the 27s.
That's what I'm saying. The Bucs, I believe, had 84 snaps on defense and probably another 10 that were still snapped, but they were called back. So Gerald McCoy actually said after the game that he was, because of the tremendous impact to the body, he was not going home to put his feet up and have dinner. He was going right to One Buck to go into the cryo freeze chamber.
Where he will be met by Lee DeKemper in the cryo chamber. Now, Lee, can the Bucks get over the mental shock of this thing by Thursday, or are they going to still be replaying this game?
Well, you know, I heard two things that's interesting. When I talked to Brent Grimes and I went to Jameis Winston's press conference 2 days ago, they were both already talking about Atlanta. They, we got to forget this. We got a game. And so I thought that was very interesting that right away they weren't, oh, woe is me.
It's probably a good thing that it's a short week, Steve.
Yeah.
It's probably a good thing.
So I thought that was very interesting. They weren't, woe is me. They were like, okay, this stunk. We're playing Atlanta. It was I'll just say this. I know you've been kind of teasing the audience with this, and so I'm going to get going here on this. The game we saw Sunday with the Raiders, we saw with our own eyes what Lovie Smith has wrought upon this franchise.
Wow.
When Lovie Smith came here, one of the very first players he kicked to the curb was Donald Penn. How's Donald Penn doing right now? Steve and I wrote time after time after time to keep Donald Penn. This is nothing against Donovan Smith. Donovan Smith, I hate to tell you this, fans, barring injury, he's going to be with the Bucs for quite a few years at left tackle. So either deal with it or buy some tums.
Wait a minute, gentlemen. Let me interject right here. This is a key factor. They got rid of Donald Penn shortly after signing the elite left tackle, mm-hmm. Anthony Collins.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't forget that, Lee.
No, not at all.
And also, you know, like I said, that was one thing we witnessed today, what Lovie wrought upon this franchise. Another one was David Carr. Bucks had two chances to get David Carr.
Derek Carr,
Houston, Texans. I apologize. Okay. You know, Derek Carr was there for the taking in the first round for whatever reason. The Bucks now will pass. They could have got him in the second round. He was drafted about two slots before the Bucks picked.
Could have traded up.
You know, the big bowel movement. You know, the huge bowel movement. ASJ. They could have got Derek Carr, not David. Derek could have got Derek. And right now, you know, no one has defended Jameis Winston more than me. But right now, you'd have to be smashed on vodka to say that Jameis Winston's a better quarterback than Derek Carr right now.
You're right.
So right there, Derek Carr, Donald Penn, that's two examples right there what Lovie wrought upon this franchise and how the franchise still hasn't recovered. And while I'm at it, I'm going to say this. If people think, oh, you're bashing Lovie, first off, we talk about all kinds of ex-coaches. So I don't understand why Lovie's so freaking special. We should never talk about this guy when he had the worst winning percentage at home of any Bucks coach in his franchise history, including a guy that started out 0-13. That's how rotten Lovie was.
Steve, do we give Jason Light a pass on releasing Donald Penn?
Didn't have any choice.
Does Light get a pass on that?
He didn't have a
decision?
Choice. He didn't have a choice. Lovie ran the show. Lovie had full control. You know that, Ira. But here's what I'm going to say about Ira. We're looking at a pattern here. You know, when Lovie was here, the first 2 years he was here, you wrote about this, Ira, about a week or so ago. It was a very good article. The Bucks completion percentage allowed on defense was atrocious 2 years in a row. Last year, 70%. Okay. Fast forward to 2016. Lovie's in Champaign. He's coaching Illinois. He took over for a complete clown and joke of a coach, got fired for abusing players. That coach, Tim Beckman, had the third best pass completion percentage defense allowed in the Big Ten. Right now, as we speak, Lovie Smith's defense, worse than the Big Ten. That's worse than Maryland. That's worse than Purdue. That's worse than Rutgers. What's the common denominator? What's the pattern? Lovie.
It's a passive pass defense, Steve. And Buck fans don't like it.
I don't think anybody likes it because it gets no results.
To answer your question, Ira, I think it's really a two-part answer. Jason Light gets a pass on releasing Donald Penn. He does not get a pass on signing Anthony Collins.
Correct.
So that's where I'd split the hair there is Lovie came in, he assessed the roster, he decided that I don't want Donald Penn.
And I don't want Darrell Revis.
Penn was released in March or late March.
He was.
So I put that squarely on Lovie, but the signing of Collins is the scouting department, and that's who they picked. They all watched the tape and they all signed off. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget when Jason Light said We have total and complete consensus on all our decisions so far
under
the Lovey regime. So that's where Light would be at fault, I think, in that specific situation. But
well, Steve, you were in the locker room with me Sunday evening after the game, and we both approached Donald Penn. Lee, and he was very glad to see both of us and wondered where DeKemper was, matter of fact. But could you describe, Steve, the twinkle in Donald Penn's eye when talking about joining the Raiders after his Buck years and scoring a touchdown against them?
Well, he's talked about it before, and look, the guy was devastated to be cut from the Bucks. Didn't think it was going to happen, and I don't blame him.
Money decision? Salary
decision? Both. I think it was money, and they didn't like what they were seeing, which to me didn't make any sense. But like Lee said, we wrote about that over and over again. Everybody else is, get rid of Penn. He's a fat slob.
He didn't have his best year in 2013. It wasn't his best year.
No, but compared to Anthony Collins, he was Orlando Pace.
His best year. However, when you have our mindset at the time was when you have a left tackle – who's good.
Durable.
And durable. That's not... Tinker with something else. Okay? You don't need to tinker with a key position that's at least acceptable and extremely durable. And he was only 30 years old at the time. So it was a mistake. But yeah, he was very excited, expressed his love for the Glazers. He said he's still a Bucks fan. He meets every year with Gerald McCoy, and he just really loves...
He thinks the Bucks are building a nice team, Steve. He did say that.
Loves the Bucks. Thinks he likes what they're building, and he legitimately does pay attention. I will say I'm in touch with Penn here and there, so I mean...
He still has friends on the team.
He's got friends around and friends on the team, and it's for him to catch a touchdown pass here at Raymond James... Nobody writes... a soap opera like the Bucks at home. It's always some sort of somebody out of the blue or somebody from the past or some epic collapse. It's quite stunning.
And you know, Steve, McCoy and Dotson in the locker room Sunday night both said that when they heard 72 eligible, they said, we knew what was going on, and they didn't stop it.
But the defense didn't. What's that tell you?
Well, it was interesting. McCoy said on Penn's touchdown, nobody missed a key. Nobody missed their spot. It just, they didn't cover Penn because they
didn't show it. They didn't show that play.
They didn't plan on Penn doing that. And McCoy was kind of like, man, we should have known that was coming. But
for
what the defense was called, we covered
they
it
executed
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah.
So they pulled off a trick play that nobody knew was a trick. That's essentially what happened.
Yeah, but Lee DeKemper knew that it was coming.
That's not good on Mike Smith. That's not good.
Now, Ira, of course, this is your podcast. Available on JoeBucksFan.com Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we're going to have a bonus podcast on Friday after the Atlanta game. So for those of you who only come to JoeBucksFan.com for the IRIC podcast, you get a bonus.
And let's hope we're not using the word abomination, Steve, after that podcast. We don't need that word.
Absolutely. And, of course, if you have an iPhone, you can just look at your iPhone, go to podcasts, and search Bucks, and there's the Ira Kaufman podcast. And while you're there, you can subscribe to Bucks Uncensored by Justin Pulaski at the same time. That means you get a little alert every time the podcast posts. It'll come on JoeBucksFan.com, and then maybe 20 minutes later, the iTunes registers it, and it buzzes in your pocket, and you can take it out and listen to Ira. Now,
hey, Steve, before we go, and I know you got a bit more ahead,
oh, we're not going anywhere.
Steve, let's mention what's coming up Thursday night, along with the Falcons and a big division game, John Lynch is getting honored. Steve, this is a big honor. I believe he's going to be maybe the ninth person up on that wall. Steve, Leroy Selman, the late great, was number one, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Lynch is going to have his 47 up there, Steve. It's a big night for Lynch. I believe he did the London game on Sunday. Then he's going home. Then he's coming here.
Ooh, and, a lot of mileage.
And of course, he's on my Hall of Fame radar, Steve. So this is going to be a very, very big year for John Lynch. I think he's also in the Broncos Ring of Honor.
Didn't that happen Monday night?
I think it did. Yeah. The Broncos snuck ahead of the Bucks.
Yeah.
Now, Ira,
he had what, two playoff games with the Broncos?
Four Pro Bowls for all 4 years.
Now, at One Buck Palace Sunday, Warren Sapp was here in the house in the media area. I saw Sapp and talked to him at the soda machine, where he was having a bit of an ice issue and was yelling about it and was demanding service, as only Warren Sapp could do when the ice doesn't come out of the machine. Now, you, I was told you had some more meaningful conversation with Warren Sapp. So what did he give you on Lynch, since we're talking about Lynch, and just what else did he give you?
Steve, the first thing I'd say to our multitude of listeners out there is, Lee, I'm quite concerned. I'm very, very concerned because Sapp's treating me like a long-lost uncle. I'm his best buddy, Steve. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if Brooks talked to him. I don't know if Rondé talked to him. I don't know if Dungy talked to him. But all I know is he's extending his hand. He's slapping me on the shoulder. Whoa. He doesn't have a knife in his hand when he's doing it. And I'm a happy boy because he gave me some good stuff on Lynch that I'm actually going to bring into the room in Houston the day before, saying that John Lynch had the most difficult assignment on that Buck defense, more than him, more than Brooks.
Wow.
He didn't say he was a better player than Derek Brooks. But I'm going to use that as a strong argument is, you know, at each level of that great Buck defense, which was great for a long period of time by NFL standards.
Very much so.
You had a playmaker, and all three of them deserve it. If five or six Kansas City Chiefs can get in off defense that won one Super Bowl, I can get three Bucks in. And by the way, I want four because Rondé's around the corner.
And you got number five, too, you got to work on.
Well, look at this. You looking for Simeon Rice?
Yes.
What are you, Ed Glazer's long-lost uncle over
there?
No,
I think he, you know, whether he gets in or not, I don't know. But he certainly, he warrants attention.
I also think he warrants Ring of Honor consideration. Now,
sure.
I don't think that means he's getting in next year. But I think Simeon's time should come
yes.
in the Ring of Honor.
Well, back to Sapp. What else did he give you?
Well, he likes the direction of the current Bucks team. Now, I didn't talk to him after this game. I didn't talk to him after the game, Steve. He could have been singing a different tune. I did see him down on the field in the fourth quarter with the game in the balance.
Wow.
I saw Sapp over there, you know, pumping his fist and trying to get things going. And what happened when he pumped his fist is Carr pumped his fist, and it was another 40-yard gain for the Raiders. So it didn't work out. But Sapp was talking to Martin Fennelly. He was talking to me, and We were trying to get stories ahead of time for Thursday night's game about Lynch. He talked about a special flight. I don't know if you guys ever heard this story, but, you know, it was 96, say. I think Sapp might have been a rookie. And, Sapp came in 95. It was Dungy's first year, 96. And they're on a plane flight, guys. They're on a plane flight. They're going to Minnesota or somewhere. And Sapp's sitting behind Lynch. And he's got playing cards. Maybe he was playing with Brooks. And all of a sudden, he decides he didn't know John Lynch at this point. And he starts flicking cards at the back of Lynch's head.
I think I heard this story
before.
One
after the other. And, you know, Lynch turns around. What's going on? But this goes on for a minute or two. Finally, Lynch got up. He turned around. He looked Sapp right in the mug. That happens one more time. We're going at it right here at 30,000 feet. He sat down. Sapp took the playing cards, put it back in the deck, and put the deck, under his chair.
I heard him talk about that.
That's the day that Lynch got Sapp's respect, and then once he started playing, and Sapp saw the kind of player he was, he got all kinds of respect. Sapp loved the fact that Lynch made four more Pro Bowls in Denver, Lee, with a different defensive scheme. He thought that was important. Of course, that's something I'd bring in the room, too.
No slight on John Lynch. I think that's the only reason he makes the Hall of Fame. If you just isolated his Bucks career, I don't think he makes it. And you're the Hall of Fame expert, but I think
you
without
sound like Mad Dog Russo
without
over there.
Denver, he don't make it.
All right,
and he performed there,
but he was a key figure on a great defense.
Oh, absolutely, he deserves the Ring of Honor. Of course,
he was one of the triplets of that defense.
One of the triplets. That's right. So you know, look, I'm gonna tell you listeners this, and you may not like this, Isbits. If I'm lucky enough to see John Lynch get that bust, followed by Rondé, and I think it's a tall order for Rondé to make it his first year of eligibility.
Sure.
Because 2018 is loaded with the Randy Mosses and the Urlachers and Ray Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
That's a strong first-time class. But, if, you know, and Ron, let's say Rondé gets in, after a year or two. I'm hanging my hat up.
Oh. You're retiring?
I'm hanging my hat up at Canton, and I'm walking off into the sunset. and Big David Baker, all 350 pounds of him, he can lift me up and carry me over the steps.
No, that's wrong.
No, yeah, that's wrong. That's wrong.
There's more guys, there's all-star, there's Warrick Dunn, there's Shelton Quarles, guys to get in.
I understand you want to go out on top, but no, no. And here's, and I'm, since you're talking Hall of Fame, since we're talking Bucks, I'll throw this out there.
All-star.
People like listen about the Hall of Fame and the Bucks. And I've heard the biggest argument against Rondy. Now, I'm for Rondy in the Hall of Fame. Like you, I think it'll be a while before he'll get in. He'll eventually get in. But I hear the biggest argument against him.
I know what you're going to say.
He was a system cornerback.
System cornerback.
You know what my retort would be? You like that word, retort.
Great.
Okay. My retort would be, and Joe Montana was a system quarterback. How'd he do? You know, everybody's a system. You play in a certain system. Everybody is.
If that's the biggest argument against Rondé Barber, I don't think that's much of an argument.
That's a weak argument.
Yeah, it's a silly argument. All right, Ira. Now we got to take you. I got to take you back to Sunday's debacle here, because the offense, the Bucks got off to a 10-0 lead.
Yes,
unless I'm missing something.
Yes, they did.
They were winning 10-3 at halftime against this Raiders team that you say so incredibly outplayed the Bucks. The Bucks were up 10-3, got off to a good start, and man, the wheels came off. It was completely impotent. Jameis Winston had probably his worst half, without an interception, just pure passing.
Lee, the man's arguing that the Bucks were outplayed, and he just said the wheels came off. Tell Izbits to get his act together over here.
All right. Let's not make it about me. So, horrible. Well, what went wrong here? Dirk Cutter, everything fell apart. As Lee wrote, the chickens came home to roost on no receiver depth. What went wrong here, and how do you fix a complete collapse like that?
The run game was nondescript. I wouldn't say awful, but compared to the previous two games, mm-hmm. it was poor.
Especially with the poor rush defense.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Steve, the Raiders were giving up 5 yards a crack coming into this game.
Yeah.
All three of us thought the Bucks could establish a pretty good running game. I didn't think they did that today. As a result, Winston faced a lot of third and longs. I believe they only made 4 out of 13 on third down. Not very good. Mm-hmm. That goes hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Check me on that, Steve. 4 out of 13. Right on.
Yeah.
And they didn't do anything on offense, Steve, after halftime. And Lee, while they weren't doing anything on offense, the Raider offense was humming, and only self-destruction from the Raiders kept this close. I think it would have got out of hand.
Oh, you're absolutely correct.
They had no answers for Cooper and Crabtree either. No answers. Now, that goes back to the pass rush. I'm not going to blame this all on Brent Grimes and Hargraves. And by the way, I thought Hargraves played decent today.
Yeah, you know, every once in a while we had fans on
Sunday. I don't have a big problem with Hargraves. I just don't.
Hargraves learned a lot of rough lessons today.
He really did.
It wasn't like he was Myron Lewis, you know.
No, but he got roasted. He could have even gotten roasted worse if they didn't have that drop. That would have probably ended the game right there.
Oh, Cooper, when he dropped it.
Boy, that was a beautifully thrown ball right into Cooper's hands.
Yeah,
right,
it was a strong throw. I mean, you know, tough day for Hargraves. But he did have that early breakup.
I think he had two of them.
First half breakup.
In the end zone.
And he did some good things. Just, you know.
Carr's outstanding. Like.
Good quarterback. You know, when he was available, Lovey's first year, my gosh, Steve, how much did we, you know, everybody remembers we screamed for Johnny Football, but we were screaming for any quarterback, whether it been Bortles, Carr.
They protect him very well, Steve. Not just this Bucks game. All year, Carr doesn't take a beating. He doesn't get hit a lot, Carr. So one of the Raider writers was telling me he's had 15 hits all season.
Yeah, part of that is a three-step drop. Part of that is he's got a monster offensive line in front of him.
He gets that ball off quick.
Steve. Yeah, as very smart quarterback, it's been that way since he got into the league. He's always been very lightly hit, lightly sacked. I believe he took the least amount of sacks last year. All right, Ira, of course, Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon have been kind enough to deliver you to the good people of Tampa since the Tampa Tribune and the Times kicked you to the curb with no respect. Unbelievable. They're going to pay. Karma's going to get them. Any parting words?
Steve, the Bucks don't have any choice. Here come the Falcons. And they're pissed off because the Bucks have owned them the last couple of years, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucks struggle in this division, but they own the Falcons, Steve, twice last year and the first game at the Georgia Dome. It's a short week, and you made a very good point. Short weeks are very tough on the visiting team. You know, and they tend to be sloppy games. Now, it's going to have to go some to top this game for sloppiness by the visiting team, because I've never seen anything like what the Raiders put out today, and they walk out with a win. But, Steve, they got to put this game in the rearview mirror. I think the short week this time around works for the Bucs because they want to put that game behind them.
Sure, and let's hope that the Falcons haven't beat the Packers a couple of days ago, that they're flying high and they're not, you know, they're not really focused on the Bucs because we just won, we just beat the Packers, we beat Aaron Rodgers, yay! And that somehow the Bucs can sneak up on them that way. You know, you always want to play a team that won. You don't always want to play a team that loses, because the losing team is more often than not PO'd because they lost.
All right, Ira, hopefully the Bucs team Glazer gets out the MRSA hazmat crew and cleans up this mess in a hurry.
Speaking of MRSA,
what about Shannon?
I'm looking at Jonathan Banks on the sideline, Steve. I still can't get over it. I don't know what's going on. Maybe there's more to it. The mystery of Jonathan Banks continues to baffle the three of us every week. I wish they just cut him.
Can I say what I wrote?
Can you get rid of this guy? If you don't want him, get rid of him.
Well, actually, real quick, you know what? Let's take this up on Thursday morning's podcast. We're going to do a special short one, and as well as your Friday podcast after the early morning, after the Falcons
game. You want to build a podcast around Jonathan Banks?
And special Thursday podcast.
Wow, what a tease.
Because there's one thing we couldn't get to today that's a little bit critical. But you know what? We appreciate everybody listening, and Ira's going to be back on Thursday.